In this episode, we're going to be talking about our picks for the All NBA teams, all defensive teams, as well as talking about some Luka Magic, the Clippers rebrand, as well as regrading some of the big trade deadline moves from this season. So let's just jump right into it. All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And a lot to get into for this episode, so let's just start by breaking down our picks for the All-NBA teams. We're going to be going over our picks for, you know, first, second, and third team, as well as the defensive teams. And we have to keep in mind that the new 65-game rule does impact these All-NBA selections. So already some very notable players are ineligible, including, you know, who was the front runner for MVP, Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, Donovan Mitchell, Bradley Beal, Jimmy Butler, LaMelo Ball, and Ja Morant. And other players are getting really close to being ineligible too, like Tyrese Haliburton, Jamal Murray, Kristaps Porzingis, Karl Anthony Towns, and even Steph Curry, who, you know, if he misses 11 more games, could miss that threshold. So, Hunter.
Yeah, and real quick, though, I was just going to say with the Steph Curry thing, it's unlikely that he'll miss that boundary, but, you know, he is injured right now with a somewhat serious ankle injury. So, you know, if his time were to be extended being injured, then, I mean, he could even be impacted, but that's likely not the case.
Yeah. I mean, Hunter, you want to take it away and then give your picks for first, second, and third team?
Yeah, I'll just start with my. I think we should go back and forth with what teams. So let me say my All NBA first team first, and let me hear yours.
Sure.
So
I feel
I
like
think
we
these
might
are,
have the same for first team.
So my first team is going to include, you know, Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, I think I have the
Is
same.
yours any different? Okay. Yeah. I
Luka,
feel like.
Giannis, Tatum, Jokic, and Shai. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory. I feel like definitely the five most, you know, running in the MVP race, and they fit perfectly here. I think this is where it might switch up a little bit. My second team, I have Stephen Curry, Anthony Edwards, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Kevin Durant.
Okay, that's not
Is yours a little different?
mine is a tad difference. I think I had Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Edwards, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Haliburton, and Kevin Durant.
Okay, so I'd say that's significantly different. So
Yeah.
we can get into that, but let's just share our third teams first. My third team is going to include Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Devin Booker, Jalen Brunson, and Bam Adebayo.
Interesting.
And
Okay.
I'll name some significant people I left off, but go ahead.
Okay, so for me, I had Damian Lillard, Stephen Curry, Devin Booker, De'Aaron Fox, and LeBron James.
Okay, I see. So let's just talk. I think some key players you left off Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
I think we both left off, you know, Tyrese. No, you had Tyrese Maxey in yours, didn't
I
you?
did not have Tyrese, but I
Okay.
have Tyrese Haliburton on my
Okay,
second
yeah,
team.
you had Tyrese Haliburton. I did not. And also, obviously, Tyrese Maxey, neither of us had, but I think he'll also miss that threshold, or maybe he even already did miss that threshold. So that's why I didn't have him there. I think if he does hit the game mark, I think it'll be a really hard decision because I think he does deserve a spot.
Yep.
But I think something really significant that is different on both of ours is I have obviously LeBron and Anthony Davis in the All-NBA second team, and you just have LeBron James making the third team.
Third team, yeah.
I think this is, I mean, one of the more significant ones. I think I could have moved both of them onto my third team, but I definitely have both of them being in my top 15 players in the NBA this season. And yes, we can talk about seeding and talk about all those things, but ultimately, all NBA teams are grading the top 15 players in the league, essentially. And LeBron James and Anthony Davis, by all means, are within that.
That's a fair argument. I guess for the all NBA teams, I like to reward winning. Hence why, you know, I would give the nod to a guy like De'Aaron Fox, whose team has won a whole lot more than the Lakers have.
That's
At
not true.
least
They're actually only two games ahead of the Lakers,
that's true.
which,
That's
to
true.
be fair, if we're going based on how the standings are now, I really don't think it matters where you look. I mean, obviously, the top three seeds in the Western Conference are very established, and you could give favor to those teams. So, you know, you could give favor to, let's say, the Timberwolves, who, I mean, you'd have to put Rudy Gobert on here since Karl Anthony Towns will be ineligible. Or you could give favor to a team like Oklahoma City, who you could put, I guess, Chet Holmgren in your top 15
Okay,
NBA players.
that's a good
But
point. I guess what I'll say for that is like maybe De'Aaron Fox is a bad example because I guess I always associate Sacramento with doing much better than they actually are. I think a guy more like Kawhi Leonard, right? Because I think
Right.
you can make a realistic argument for, like, I don't know, who's had a better season, Kawhi Leonard or Steph Curry or Kawhi Leonard or LeBron. But I obviously have Kawhi ahead of both those guys because, the Clippers are doing much better than the Warriors and the Lakers. And so I want to, like, give Kawhi that nod there in the second team. And so I can definitely see the argument for having AD in the all NBA teams. And to be honest, after, like, if the Kings end up finishing pretty low, like, I would be more than happy putting Anthony Davis in my third team instead of De'Aaron Fox. I just think that, I think the Kings are actually gonna kind of piece together.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Kings are a team that always gets snubbed in these sorts of rankings.
No All-Stars.
Yeah, exactly. No All-Stars this year. I wouldn't be surprised if De'Aaron Fox made an All-NBA team or even Domantas Sabonis. He's been having an incredible season. But ultimately, I think that's kind of nitpicking. I feel like those are smaller things that it could go either way. And I wouldn't be mad either way as a fan of the NBA. As a Laker fan, I could be upset. But realistically, I can understand that. That one of those spots being taken by Sabonis over Anthony Davis, although I think AD is a significantly better NBA player. I want to
Let me
talk
hear
about,
your I just want to
oh,
hear your second team again.
yeah, Steph Curry, Anthony Edwards, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Kevin Durant. I think you did have Kevin Durant and Anthony Edwards on there, but I
I
think
did,
all your
yes.
other three were different, which included Tyrese Maxey. Who else?
Tyrese Haliburton, Jalen
Oh, sorry.
Brunson, and Kawhi Leonard. I want to talk about Jalen Brunson real quick because I don't think
Right.
you had him on anywhere on this
Oh, yeah, no, I
list.
did. He's on my third team.
Okay, just want
I
to make
think
sure.
I really wanted to put him on my second team. I just have Steph Curry in that spot. I think we switched those two guys. And the reason is Steph Curry gets better every year. Steph Curry is a better player than he was last year, and he's a better player than he was in 2015, and a better player than he was in 2016 when he had his unanimous MVP. And I will, some people might disagree with that take, but I also think Steph's been a healthy enough player this year, and without him, the Warriors have been so drastically bad that they would probably be the 13-14 seed if he was not there, just barely dragging them along. And he's essentially doing it all by himself. He is no help, and he's just so incredible on the floor. He's so impactful. I had to put him in my second team.
I just want to push back on that. The idea that, Steph Curry is having a better season than he was last year. I think that, I mean, how? Like, genuinely, sorry, that's like a serious question. How is he having a better season last year? He's less efficient. He's scoring less. He's assisting less. He's rebounding less. The
Actually, I feel
Warriors
like
are winning
he's rebounding
less.
more. I believe he's rebounding significantly more this year.
No, he's averaging about 4.4 rebounds. Last year, he was averaging six.
Okay, maybe I'm
So in
mistaken.
every
Maybe you're
regard,
right.
he's playing worse than he has been last year. And so that's why I went with him in the third team. I don't know. Maybe you're seeing some I'm not, Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, I think the counting stats don't tell the full story. I think when you look at the eye test, I think Steph Curry, just his game constantly evolves. And when you talk about this team as a whole, he's had, I think, less help this year than he even had last year. I think,
It's the same team.
it's a similar team, but like Dante DiVincenzo leaving was a big hit to this team. Chris Paul being injured and not having Jordan Poole anymore is a significant hit to this team. Klay Thompson regressing even farther than he regressed last year, significant hit to this team. And
That's
Draymond
fair.
Green being constantly suspended, significant blow to this team. I don't blame Steph Curry for this team's issues, and I know that's not what you're doing either, but I just really think he's having just as good, if not a better season than he's ever had in the league. And
Okay. I mean,
efficiency is going to be a slight dip compared to last year. Like you said, his field goal percentage was 47% last year, and this year it's 45%. I think that's reflected in, just how much he's had to do on his own, and it's crazy how efficient he is while still doing that at this level.
Yeah, I
I
don't
think it's
disagree.
nitpicking, though.
I don't disagree he's having a great season. I think, you compare his season to Jalen Brunson, who, has really elevated this Knicks team to another level and is putting up some amazing stats. I mean, we know what he's been able to do with the Knicks. I mean, he's putting up this year, what, like 27, 6-4, great shooting splits, and just making the Knicks a legitimate contender. So I just think that in terms of impact, in terms of, big time shot making, in terms of efficiency, in terms of raw numbers, I think Jalen Brunson hasn't beat.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. I think Just looking at some other players, I think we both had Devin Booker and Bam Adebayo on our third team, and Damian Lillard as well. So I don't think there's any. I think really there was just a few players around the edges, but I think for the most part, our teams were pretty similar. Would you agree?
Well, let's I just want to bring up one more a couple more guys. I want to talk about the Phoenix Suns here, because they have a couple potential All-NBA guys, in Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Where you had KD in your second team and Booker in your third?
Yeah, I think you had the same as
Okay,
well.
I had the same as well.
And I think that's really fair placement. I think Kevin Durant has been the best player on this team, and I think Devin Booker has been a close second to him. And this team has had a lot of injury history, and they're still honestly piecing it together better than I thought they could. Especially because to start the season, they looked very similar to Brooklyn. But especially since acquiring Royce O'Neal and some other guys at the deadline, which we'll talk about a little later, I think they've looked significantly better, and they've been the best offense and honestly a pretty good defense, which was unexpected. And I think what puts Kevin Durant in the second team for me is his elevation in his defense, which he's continued to do in this back half of his career.
Yeah, 100% agree on everything you just said there. How about the Clippers? Where do you have Kawhi and PG?
I actually don't have Paul George on here. I
Yeah,
do
me neither.
have Kawhi.
On your third team?
I think it's really hard to leave off both James Harden and Paul George, but I just think this Clippers team, I think they share the ball to the point where it kind of lowers them all a little bit, just as far as where you'd place them in all NBA and all-star rankings. But Kawhi Leonard is clearly the top dog in this team. You have to reward him for being healthy, for being, significantly better than he has been these past couple of years. And like when you look at his counting stats relative to some of these other guys, 24, 5 and 5 a night is pretty good. But I think when you comparing him, if you're going to move like LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, I don't think any of those guys deserve to be lowered by Kawhi's season that he's been having. Although he's been incredibly efficient.
And I like that's for me is the big thing with Kawhi. It's the efficiency and the defense. I think, like add on to him being an elite two-way guy leading to team success. That's why I put him on my second team instead of LeBron. But for the most part, as you said, yeah, we had very similar picks here. And I would imagine that, the All-NBA teams are going to look pretty similar to like some combination of ours, maybe with one or two snubs here and there. But I think we hit the first team right on the money. Those are like pretty
I would be shocked
definitively.
if anybody else was on the first team.
100%. And I think
I will also be surprised if Anthony Davis is not on at least the third team. I think he really has been having the best season. And if you're going to leave any Laker off, it should be LeBron James, even though it would never be. They're going to have him there just because it is him. But realistically, Anthony Davis has been the best Laker this season.
I mean, I think that if anyone was going to get left off in the Lakers, it'd be Anthony Davis. I think LeBron
I
gets kind
agree.
of on there by legacy, but wouldn't be surprised if they both make it. And what do you know? The Kings get snubbed again. Not that I would be complaining as a Laker fan, but from there, I think we could talk about our defensive teams. So maybe I could share first and then you want to
Yeah, go
follow
ahead.
up. Okay. So my all defensive first team I have in the format. For the defensive teams is I think two guards and three forwards, counting basically anybody in the front court as a forward, compared to the all NBA teams, which I think are positionless. Hence why we could have like four guards, on like, for example, my third team had four guards. But basically with that being said, my all NBA first team is Derek White, Jaden McDaniels, Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, Rudy Gobert, and then my all defensive second team is Alex Caruso, Jalen Suggs, Herb Jones, Giannis, and Victor Wembanyama.
That's an interesting team. I think actually our first teams are identical. I have
Okay.
Derek White, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, and Rudy Gobert. And your second team, my second team's a little bit different. I have
Okay.
OG Anunoby, Alex Caruso, Shea. I have Shea making it.
Okay.
Draymond Green and Victor Wembanyama. I don't have Giannis on there.
Interesting.
I think I reward with the defensive teams, the teams that have been playing the best defense, with when it comes to statistics. When you look at who's been that, it has been Derek White. He's been one of those guys. Anthony Davis has been one of those guys. Bam Adebayo. But moving over to the second team real quick, I mean, I'm giving Shea the benefit of the doubt as the steals leader for the second team. Draymond Green has been one of the top net defensive players in the NBA this year. When he has been on the floor, it's night and day for the Warriors defensively, and he orchestrates everything for them. So I think he deserves credit even at this point in his career when he's not quite as effective. And I have Wemby on there making it. Did you have Wemby as well?
Yeah, I want to be on my
Yeah.
second team.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, look, I value a team defense as well. That's why I have Jalen Suggs making it. I mean, talk about the Orlando Magic's defense. They've been, one of the premier defenses all season. They're easily been a top five defense, and he's been a key contributor to that reason. Just an absolutely tenacious defender, absolute ball stopper on the other end of the floor. And then Herb Jones as well for the Pelicans. Part of how the Pelicans have been, a legit playoff team this year has been through their defense. And I think that Herb Jones, like, he's really elevated his versatility on that end of the floor. And I think that I want to reward that with an all defensive selection. And then finally, Alex Caruso. I think that, like, while the Bulls have, not necessarily been the best defensive team, they've been pretty mediocre, hovering around the, like, 15 to 18 range. I still think he's been a phenomenal individual defender, and so I'm willing to make an exception and say he deserves a slot on the second team because, he's been racking up the steals, even blocks too, and just, like, really being the focal point of defense for a struggling Bulls team. And so those are that's kind of the rationale behind my picks. And just to address yours quickly, I think SGA is fine. I mean, like, sure, like, if you want to give him the steals thing, I just think there have been better defenders than him, but I wouldn't be mad. I think he actually probably will make all defensive team just because of, like, he's kind of trendy right now. He's like MVP front runner and, all NBA first team guy. Like, he might get a defensive nod. And then OG Anunoby, I just think he's missed too much time, and, like, I don't like giving it to a guy that's kind of, like, split his time between two teams because I feel like their impact is kind of hard to measure.
Well, even then, when you look at the Knicks' defensive statistics before and after he joined the team, it's ridiculous. The Knicks, yes, they were one of the better defensive teams in the NBA, but since acquiring OG Anunoby, they have been the number one defense in the NBA. It's no question about it. Since acquiring him, when he's in, they are the best defensive team in the NBA, and that's why I put him there.
That's fair, but do you not think his impact is sort of minimized because he's spent some time in Toronto and then he spent his time in New York? So it's just, like, it's hard for him to really gauge, like, to what extent is this his impact? Because, like, okay,
He clicked right away.
they have been an amazing defensive team while he was in, but, how many games did they play with that cohesive unit? How many games did he play with New York? It's not a big enough sample size that we can definitively say it's been his impact and, he's this amazing defensive player, which I think he is, but to make that all defensive team, I think we need a larger sample size.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be mad with Herb Jones being there instead, but I do think OG, I like to reward metrics when it comes to the defensive teams, because I think metrics do a better job than most people when it comes to the eye test, just because people aren't necessarily trained to watch a defense. We're trained to watch an offense, but sometimes we don't notice the little things that players do on defense,
Sure.
and that's why a lot of these guys don't get as appreciated.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, a lot of times players can get a reputation for being a good defender, and that'll kind of stick with them forever. And even if they're not having a great defensive season, like, for example, DeAndre Hunter, we know him as this 3-and-D kind of, like, lockdown guy. He's actually not having a very good defensive year, which was surprising to me, even because I hadn't been, like, intently watching the Atlanta Hawks all season. But checking the numbers, like, he's been having a pretty subpar defensive season, and it's been kind of a reason why they've been a bad defensive team. And so that shocked me, but, he still has that reputation with him. Same thing kind of with DeJounte Murray. Like, he hasn't been that defensive, defensive foundation that the Hawks have kind of needed him to be. And so, yeah, it's kind of crazy how far your reputation can get you in the modern NBA.
Yeah, real quick question. Why didn't you have Draymond in your defensive teams?
Because the Warriors are not a good defensive team, and he missed a ton of time.
Actually,
Like,
that's not true. The Warriors are the third best defensive team in the NBA.
Now that you look at the defensive rating and they're number 18. But on that point, I mean, like, think of how much time he's missed this year. Just between all the suspensions. I think that it's just, I don't know. He's a top 20 defender, and he might even be a top 15 defender. But to make the top 10, I think you have to have a consistent, thorough impact throughout the year. But he just has lacked that
Okay, you can
consistency
knock him
due
off
to
for
his,
suspensions. I get that.
yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
But
Okay.
I mean, we can't deny he's an amazing defensive player.
Yes. I think we can move on from there though, just because I think we both have fairly similar both all NBA and defensive teams. I
Sure.
think I would be surprised if there was a player that made, you know, one of these teams that wasn't on either of our lists. Moving on, I want to talk about the Clippers rebrand because we didn't get the chance to talk about this on the last podcast. This happened a couple weeks ago now, but the Clippers have changed their jerseys for next year. They've changed their logo, and they've actually moved their G League to Oceanside, which is in San Diego, if you're not LA or a SoCal native. And, you know, they're obviously moving into their new arena in Inglewood in 2024. So, or sorry, not in 2024, I believe 2025. But just what do you think of this new rebrand, and do you like this logo?
The logo, which I think everyone should look up for themselves, I'm not crazy about it. I get there's a lot of meaning behind it, but I don't know, just something about it is not aesthetically pleasing. I think that honestly, like, the Clippers have always struggled to sort of find like an identity, like what they are, what they kind of represent, and yeah, just kind of that brand identity. And I do like the direction they're going in. I think the jerseys look great. You know, these very like vibrant red and just deep blue and, you know, the clean white jerseys. And I like the font and everything. I think that they're sort of, that has really helped them sort of find their own footing and their own identity as a team, as an organization, at least from like a branding standpoint. But the courts and the logo, I don't know. It just doesn't click. It doesn't like scream anything very iconic or memorable or just visually that all that appealing. I like the meme behind it, but I don't know. I just not can't really get behind the logo that much. What do you think?
I think I'm a little bit bigger of a fan of it than you are. I wouldn't say it's like my favorite logo in the NBA or anything like that, but I like the direction. You know, they went from the least meaningful logo and the least meaningful franchise, like least recognizable, to something of their own. I do like the meaning behind it. I like that they went with something that was significant to the team. I wish they had chose a different type of ship though on the logo. I think it looks like a cruise ship when a
Yeah.
They are a Clipper. If you don't know what a Clipper has roots in their original team when they were the San Diego Clippers, and it's a type of ship that would be you know, in the bay and in San Diego. And clearly on this logo, when you look at it, you would either think that looks like a freight cargo ship or like a cruise ship, which these Clipper ships were small ships. They're small boats.
Yeah, it looks
So
like the Los Angeles, like it looks like a cruise line
Royal
or something, you
Caribbean.
know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the blue and the white. It's
I feel
literally
like I'm
Royal Caribbean.
about to see an ad for them for like some new Bahamas co cruise or something like that.
Right. So I get that. That I feel like is the one place they messed up on this logo. But it's still something of their own. It's definitely going to be recognizable when you see this, when you see the boat, you know this is the Clippers. They didn't just make a big C or just literally write out Clippers. Like, that was pretty lame. At least they now have something to call their own. They have something to brand, to put on memorabilia that fans can wear and represent proudly. All five of the Clipper fans. but no, I like it. I think the jerseys are some of the cleanest jerseys we've seen in recent memory of these new rebranded jerseys. I feel like teams either go too weird in a direction with some strange font, strange pattern, or like a gradient, or they end up way too simple. And I think this is a good happy medium. These are nice, clean jerseys, not too simple, and the colors pop. So overall, I give this Clippers rebrand like a B. I'd say a B. Like, I feel like it's an above average rebrand in today's NBA, but by no means was it a home run.
Wait, above average is a B? What are we working with a B minus average here?
We're calling a C an average. I feel
C
like,
is average?
yeah,
Wow.
no,
Okay.
I feel like generally speaking, like when you think of like a grading list, like 70% would be considered the average.
Wow, working with a tough grader here. Dang.
I'm a tough professor, man.
Do not let Hunter like be your professor if he's ever goes into academia. But yeah, I think that's a fair grade, honestly. I think I'll give him more like a B minus then if we're working with a C average. B minus, just because like the logo, I mean, the cruise ship, come on. We like I think something a bit more like I don't know if they just made like a graphic of, you know, an old timey ship or something that would have fit a lot more than this big cruise liner. But I do like that they now have something to call their own. And it, like with this new stadium in Inglewood, it's a new era for the Clippers. And I'm glad that a rebrand sort of followed as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a good time for them too, especially as they move sort of to the end of the Paul George and Kawhi Leonard era. I mean, we could see it continue again, but I think while you still have your stars, you're able to move the team and still have some sort of revenue building out of that. You know, who knows what'll end up happening with this trio of James Harden, Paul George, and Kawhi. We know that Kawhi Leonard re-signed, so he's going to be there in the long term, probably to the end of his career. But you know, I think this is a good point to mark the era in Clippers history at Staples.
Totally agree with that. But I think from there we can move on to talk about Luka Doncic because he has been playing out of his mind recently. He's had a triple double in the past 7 games in a row, and these numbers are like straight out of NBA 2K. I mean, just like some of the highlights, 39, 10, and 11, 38, 11, and 10, 39, 10, and 10, 35, 11, and 11, 37, 12, and 11, like just insane numbers. But these have not really translated that much into wins. I mean, a big meme going around online is calling Luka despite the loss, man, because it's like every post about him is like, despite the loss, Luka Doncic had these insane numbers. And so, Hunter, I just want to talk about the Mavs a little bit. I want to talk about Luka. So, do you think the Mavs are one real contenders? Do you think that Luka's style of play is the reason why they haven't these insane performances haven't been translating into wins? Like, do you think he is too high a usage player, and do you think he kind of doesn't really let others get involved in the game? And how do you think the Mavs really stack up to the rest of the Western Conference?
Yeah. So do I think the Mavs are real contenders? I think that's a to be seen thing. I don't know the answer to that question yet. I think we've seen them really dominate the series like we saw in Phoenix a couple years ago when Kyrie still wasn't there yet. And then we've also seen this team really kind of fall flat on their feet. I believe it was against the Warriors last postseason. So the answer is I really don't know. I need to see Luka Doncic be able to trust his teammates a little more. Like you're saying, I think he dominates the game a little bit too much. And I think this season we've seen that. I think he's really trusted Kyrie and kind of learned to work with a second star. I think very similar to sort of like early career LeBron. I feel like LeBron, especially like when he was going up against those big mean Celtics teams, he was trying to do it all on his own. And I don't think it's super comparable because I think LeBron James was still much more willing to give up that last shot. And that's what he was always criticized for at the end of his career, as opposed to Luka, who's always taking the last shot. But I do still think there's some parallels you can draw there. And I think, honestly, that Luka's ability to give up the ball and to allow his teammates to thrive is really going to be dependent on how well Kyrie Irving plays. I think it depends on how trusting he can be of his guys, and not just Kyrie Irving, but that goes for all of his key pieces. And, you know, Derek Lively, who is a first-year player, and PJ Washington. And I'm sorry, I'm forgetting some of the other guys they traded for. It was PJ Washington,
Daniel
Daniel Gafford.
Gafford.
Yeah, Daniel Gafford. So I think he has to see that out of those guys in the biggest moments. And I think that takes a postseason. So I don't really know. I'm going to lean towards the no. I don't think this team and Luka Doncic are able to like kind of let go and play free basketball. Like, and you asked me, how does this team compare to the rest of the West? Like, I just don't see that sort of flexibility and just like looseness of a team like the Nuggets and how they carry themselves, or even going up against a team like, you know, OKC. Like, I don't know that the Mavs would beat OKC, one of the probably the weaker, higher seeded teams we've seen in a very long time. And I think it doesn't help them to have a lot of young, inexperienced postseason players. Really, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving are the only real players on this team that play significant minutes that have been in those positions, which is not what you want when you're relying heavily on your front court to be able to defend and to be able to exercise restraint in the post.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. I think that, the more I've watched this team, the more sour I've kind of grown on them. I kind of bit the Kyrie Luka apple, and at first it was really sweet, but then over time it turned really bitter after I realized maybe it had a rotten core. And I think that's kind of the problem with this team. One, I think Jason Kidd makes some very questionable coaching decisions sometimes in terms of rotations, in terms of schemes. And I don't know if I trust him in a playoff setting to make a deep run. As well, I also don't think that a lot of these pieces, I don't know how they're going to fare in a playoff atmosphere. I mean, like, as you said, Derek Lively's been fantastic, but, it's going to be his first year. I mean, it is his first year in the league, and so it's going to be his first playoff run. Guys like Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, Josh Green haven't had a ton of playoff experience, and they're key parts of the rotation, and so obviously I think that when you look at Kyrie and Luka, anything can happen. I mean, we see the numbers Luka's putting up, and with him going off and Kyrie going off, we've seen some incredible kind of like Batman and Robin, or I guess the better comparison is like Batman and Superman performances, where it's just like 1A, 1B, like sharing the ball, like exactly what you would have envisioned when you told me, or when you said Kyrie and Luka will be teaming up in Dallas, right? But is that enough to win you a 7-game series against a lot more of these teams that are, better defensively, deeper, and are just more well-rounded? I don't think so. And so I think that if all the stars align for Dallas, they could pull off like a first round win, maybe against like a team like OKC that you said that has a lot of vulnerabilities and is just as inexperienced. But yeah, I think that that's pretty much their ceiling. I don't see them making another deep run like they did in 2022.
Yeah, and also have to keep in mind, I think there is still like a kind of a caveat on their 2022 run, which is they were shooting like 60% from deep in that postseason. That's just not a sustainable rate of 3-point shooting. And this team was so heavily reliant on the 3-point shooting that their whole game plan was, we're just going to outshoot you. And if we manage to make 55% of our threes, then we're going to win. And if we make 40% of our threes, then we're going to lose. And that's never going to work. I also wanted to mention one more thing with this team is, which was never a good sign for a team, is their new starting lineup. They only have, I believe, something like 78 minutes together, and there's only three teams in the NBA with starting lineups that have only played less than 100 total minutes, and those other two teams are the Grizzlies and the Heat. The Heat are a really good team, but they've just had a lot of injuries this season. And the Grizzlies obviously have been the most injured team, very inconsistent, and one of the worst teams in the league. That's not, two teams you want to be in the conversation with, especially for a team that's been relatively healthy this entire season, like with the exception of Kyrie Irving. So I think, they, like we've been talking about, they score at a historic pace. That's never really been the problem with this team. It's they can't defend, and they're not winning basketball, even when Luka's having historic games. And I think we're going to start having to have the conversation. Is he stat padding a little bit? Do you think that he might be stat padding, or do you think he's doing this because he's trying to win?
I think it's unfair to say he's stat padding. I mean, like, he's putting up numbers, he's doing all he can, but I mean, like, you look at some of the guys around him and they just are not like, it's not reliable talent. It's the same argument as when LeBron was in Cleveland and he just had subpar talent around him. I mean, but he has Kyrie, sure, but I mean, his next best scoring option is what?
Tim
PJ
Hardaway.
Washington, Tim Hardaway Jr. Like, I mean, they're decent players, but I mean, they're not the kind of like star level role players, if you want to call them that, a lot of other stars around the league are afforded, So I think that I don't fault Luka too much for this. I do want to see him buy in a bit more defensively. That's one thing I think he can improve on significantly. He has been better this year. He has been better, but I still think there's a lot of room to grow there because he is a little bit of a liability on that floor. Like he'll hit a three, he'll, get you a bucket on one end, but then if he gives up another two in the other, like where's the impact? Like
I
it
also want to
completely
see
negates itself.
a lot less talking to the refs. I feel like Luka is definitely one of the guys who talks to the refs every single possession. He doesn't like a call, and that also results in a lot of lost time.
Yep, absolutely. It's the same thing as like Joel Embiid. Like both these guys, phenomenally talented players, incredible scorers, but I think sometimes their game is too focused on like drawing the fouls or like playing the kind of like meta game with the refs. And it's like just focus on the pure basketball. Like you're talented enough, you don't have to worry about all that.
Exactly. I want to move into a new segment, which is I want to regrade some of the biggest trade deadline moves that have happened up till now. We're at the halfway point post All-Star break, so I think it's a good time to sort of rank these. We have 15 games or 16 games left in the NBA season, as crazy as that sounds. And I want to start with the team we just talked about because they were a team that had a lot of big offseason moves. Obviously, I think people can tell we're not the biggest fans of the Dallas Mavericks, but how do you regrade their acquisitions of Daniel Gafford, and PJ Washington, and also Grant Williams leaving? How do you think it's impacted this team
I
if you
mean,
were to grade?
I think it was a good move. I still think it was a good move, even if it hasn't necessarily like resulted in them completely turning the ship around. I think Daniel Gafford's been very solid, extremely efficient player. I mean, he's like I think rivaling or getting close to rivaling Wilt's record of like most consecutive field goals made without a miss. When and so whenever you're challenging one of Wilt's records, I think something went right. And they didn't have to give up too much to get him, to get these guys. And so I think that, PJ Washington as well. I know I kind of spoke about him in a demeaning light, but I think that he's a solid offensive player. And since you didn't have to give up too much to get him, I think it was these were good moves. So I don't think they were the sort of groundbreaking moves that we thought they were going to be. Like I think we might have given them like an A minus, but I think I might downgrade that to like a B plus.
Yeah, I still would agree. I think that's still a B plus. This team did get better. We still had those questions, and if anything, I think they've proven themselves a little bit more than they had before. I think we had bigger question marks about them, although they're winning a little bit less. This team has higher potential still. Moving on to the next team, though, I wanted to talk about the Pacers and their acquisition of Pascal Siakam. I believe in that trade was Buddy Hield. I can't remember all the details of who was in it, but the Pacers gave up a few guys to get Pascal Siakam and a significant draft capital. So they're 11-11 since acquiring Pascal Siakam. Where do you think that this team stands? What's your grade for them?
I mean, I think that I'm gonna have to give this move like a C plus. I think that, you did give up some very significant players in this deal. As you said, Buddy Hield was a big part of this team. And in theory, you're acquiring Pascal Siakam, who should be the perfect fit for this team, right? He's a slashing four, should like pair right up alongside Tyrese Haliburton, but it just hasn't translated into wins. And it shouldn't, obviously, any player is going to take time to adjust to a new system, but the fit was so clear on paper that people thought this would just be like a plug and play. The Pacers are just going to immediately get a lot better, but in fact, they've looked almost worse. And I mean, you can credit that to a lot of factors, not necessarily just Siakam. I mean, Haliburton, I feel like, has been a lot more inconsistent in the second half of the season than he was in the first.
Definitely.
And so obviously, the Pacers kind of ride or die with him. And I mean, when you do ship out so much of your team and bring in a whole new star, that is going to take a lot of time for adjustment. And I think we've seen some of those growing pains, especially early on. And, I mean, they're figuring it out slowly but surely. You see in some of these games, like, you could start to see the vision for how this team is going to be put together. But for what you have to give up and for how it's sort of panning out right now, I think maybe I was a little too harsh for the C plus. I give it a B minus for now. I think I'll stick with that because it hasn't been necessarily a bad trade. They've been mediocre. So it hasn't been, I'll stick with B minus for now.
I think initially you were in the A grade camp, and I was a little bit more skeptical of this trade. And I don't think I'm any more skeptical than I was before. I think I'm sitting around where I was before, which is I don't think this really moved the needle for the Pacers. I think it maybe makes them a little bit better, but ultimately, they're still not like a top contender in the East. Right now, they're sitting at the sixth seed. They've had some really significant wins. They just beat the Magic, who are ahead of them in the standings, and they just beat the Thunder in a really significant game as well. Benedict Mathurin's out for the season. That has nothing to do with this trade, but just, talking about where they stand overall. I mean, this is a team that's been a little plagued by injury, and I think a lot of their players had really good starts to the season, and they're starting to fall off. And it could be one of those just situations where a young team is kind of just playing free, and other NBA teams are sort of just still figuring it out, and they're able to capitalize on that, and they start winning early in the season and seem like one of those really strong teams. Like, similarly to the Orlando Magic, who were like either the one or the two seed in the East within the first 25 games of the season. And that was really big on them. But I think ultimately, the big dogs start to eat right around now, and it starts to hurt a team like the Pacers, who are still young and aren't quite as structured as these other teams. So I think I'm still going to sit right around that B minus grade right with you. But I don't think.
I'm actually gonna downgrade mine to like a C, I think. Because
Really?
if we're calling C average, like, are we saying this is an above average deal? If
I'd
like,
say I think this is slightly above average for what they had to give up. I mean, look, you gave up Buddy Hield, you gave up some periphery pieces, but overall, I think I'm okay with 11-11 if we can stay right around that 500 mark and maybe ramp up towards the postseason. I'm okay with it.
also, I think we're wrong. I think the Buddy Hield trade was in a different package.
Okay. I can't
I think
remember who it was.
it was Bruce Brown, I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah,
Jordan
exactly.
Nwora,
Yeah.
I think a couple firsts,
You're
or it
right.
was like three firsts, or how many firsts was it? Regardless, it was like a good number of firsts.
Yeah, you're right. That was my bad. I just totally was mistaken there. But
Yeah.
regardless, I think even if you had to give up Bruce Brown, he was a significant piece on your team, and he was one of those guys who held down the fort. But I think Pascal Siakam obviously has a higher ceiling than that, and he's been far more efficient on the Pacers than he was on the Raptors, which is what you were looking for. I just don't think the games have quite gone your way like you were expecting. I'm still giving this an above average grade, but I don't think it's any different than where I thought it was before.
I'll say C then, just because it's been a perfectly average trade so far. Hasn't been a disaster, but it hasn't been great, so I'll stick with C. The next deal I want to bring up is Terry Rozier to the Heat, because this was another sort of like pretty obvious slam dunk in my opinion, but it's been a bit more mixed, at least initially. Rozier's had a rough start during his time in Miami, having an effective field goal percentage of just 43.7%. Which is the fourth worst mark among 204 players with at least 100 field goal attempts. But the Heat have sort of figured it out in the past 5 weeks. They're 11-3, and their only loss in the past 7 games was a narrow 6-point loss to Denver on the road. So what would you regrade this move?
Yeah, I think this initially for us was like a B plus, A minus kind of deal. I really think that we both thought that he was going to impact this team at a high level, and I think that still stands. I'm keeping my grade at like an A minus. I really do think this helps this team a lot. He's still a dog. Maybe he's not hitting his shots quite at the rate he was in Charlotte, but he also had the full green light in Charlotte to do whatever he wants. He's now having to fit into his system and adjust his game slightly. And I still do think he's been very effective, even if his shot hasn't been dropping. I mean, players, field goal efficiency can, go up and down. But ultimately, Terry Rozier fits this team way better than Kyle Lowry did at this point in his career. And as this team ramps up for the postseason, I'm very excited to see what they can do because, like you just said, their only loss in the past 7 games was a 6-point loss to Denver. And hey, I'm excited to see what this team can do again against a team like the Boston Celtics in the postseason, because really, who knows what, Jason Tatum and Jrue Holiday can do against a very, underdog Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, Terry Rozier. Like, I just love this squad, and I think that this trade helped them increase and motivate that culture.
I do want to mention one thing about that statistic about the wins and losses. I think that was as of March 5th. Recently, they did lose to Dallas, OKC, and
Okay,
Washington.
well, we can pretend that didn't happen because I saw that and I was just like, it doesn't fit my narrative, man. You're
Hey,
ruining my narrative. But
you gotta respect honesty,
hey,
but
look, listen, yeah, it is true. They have lost some of their last games, but ultimately, I think this team is ramping up, not down.
yes,
And
agreed.
even if Terry Rozier, his efficiency isn't quite as good, I think the moral of the story you can take away here is he fits exactly what they're trying to do. And this team isn't built for the regular season anyway. They've never been built for the regular season, and people are always going to doubt them, and they're always going to come into the postseason and surprise.
I agree. And that's why I'm also going to stick with my B plus ranking. I think that, Terry Rozier, he has struggled to find a shot. And at times that has sort of been a detriment for them. Like, they expect him to come in and be the sufficient shooter. And, he's shooting about 30% from three, which is never going to be great. But he's been doing pretty much everything else they want him to. He's playmaking the ball. He's rebounding when he can as a, for a small guard. He's playing defense, which I think is really the big thing for them, is that he's a great two-way player and he's contributing to that end of the floor. And I think that's how they've gotten quality wins over good teams like like Milwaukee, New Orleans, Sacramento, etc. And so I think, as you said, you're entirely correct. I think Miami's ramping it up as of late, and Rozier is a big reason why. So I'm gonna stick with this B plus, and I think he might have a series in the playoffs where he kind of has that same role that Caleb Martin had, where he just goes nuclear and drops 40, or drops 30 points on 40% from three, against like Boston or something like that. I could definitely
Yep,
see
exactly.
something like that happening.
I think we can move on there,
Yeah.
though. If we can talk about the next big deadline move, which was RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quigley to the Raptors in that OG Anunoby trade. Both of them have had really increasing efficiency, especially RJ Barrett, who's increased his effective field goal percentage by 15%, and Emmanuel Quigley by about 10%. So what have you seen about from these two guys, and what have you seen from the Raptors in general since the trade?
Yeah, I mean, I love the fit for Barrett and Quickley in Toronto. It feels like they just have so much more freedom to play. I mean, obviously there is a lot less expectation. No one's expecting them to win. They're on a rebuilding squad, but it seems like they've both been able to elevate their games. Both being starters now. I mean, you have Quickley, what's it called, Barrett. Obviously, you have what's it called. Bruce Brown is starting to
Scotty
that
Barnes.
Scottie Barnes. It's a very small lineup they're running in Toronto, but I think that's worked, and that has allowed, as you said, like RJ Barrett to play a lot more fluid, to really work on his offensive craft and to flourish in that role. And so I think this has been a great deal for I can rank these trades differently. For New York, I think it's been okay so far because they've been great when OG's been playing, but at the same time, OG hasn't been playing all that much. But for Toronto, you got great pieces for the future. So let me say, I think I'll rate this, like, honestly, maybe a A minus for the Raptors. I think this is a really good deal for them because RJ Barrett and Quickley are going to be big pieces for them in the as they continue to build. And OG Anunoby was kind of like a vestige of like that 2019 team, like you kind of had to let that go. And then for the Knicks, I'll give the OG trade a B so far, just because he hasn't played all that much. And I think, if you gave up these really key contributors to your team for a guy that, isn't even healthy for your postseason run, like, what was it all for?
Yeah, and I know this is a separate trade, but when talking about Bogdanovich being added to the Knicks and Alec Burks as well, those are two guys who are supposed to come in, sort of light it up from three, give them some quick offense. And both of them have been a little bit disappointing. Bogdanovich has seen a big decrease in his efficiency since joining the Knicks, being in the pis on the Pistons. And Alec Burks has been the worst 3-point shooter in the league with that Terry Rozier stat. He's the 204th best player of those 204 players who have qualified in that 100 field goals, I believe. Yeah, 100 field goal attempts. He has been shooting, I believe, 29% from the effective field goal, which is
Jesus.
historically bad. Regardless, just sticking more to Bogdanovich, who's a more significant piece, who he was a guy who's supposed to be, worth two first rounders and really step up. What have you seen from him?
I mean, he just hasn't been all that he's built up to be. I mean,
Yeah.
for a guy worth supposedly, allegedly, two first round picks, that's what they're asking for the Lakers, right? He has not played up to that value. And I think that, he's struggling so far to find his role. And I think, yes, you have to credit the injuries, or you have to understand that injuries are factoring into this. I think that, when Brunson's fully healthy, when Randall's fully healthy, when OG's fully healthy, Even when Mitchell Robinson's fully healthy, this is going to be a completely different team. And I think the fit might be more fluid because he has to be a much greater contributor to the offense right now because so many of the other offensive weapons are missing. But I mean, as it's seen right, as it's looked right now, he just hasn't been as efficient. His shot hasn't really been falling. And so, yeah, I think the trade hasn't panned out as much as you would have wanted to. But I mean, in terms of what you had to give up, Quentin Grimes was a good player, but he was toward the end of your rotation. And I think that, not having to give up a first round pick was really important. And so, honestly, I'll also give this one a B just because for different reasons, it hasn't been all that you've expected. But I still view both the OG move and the Bogdanovich move as positive for the most part.
Yeah, I'm gonna give actually the for the Raptors an A plus. I think this is one of those.
Wow.
I think this is a knock it out of the park home run move because ultimately you have to move on from like the legacy of that 2019 team. You don't have Kawhi. You got rid of Fred VanVleet. You got rid of Pascal Siakam. OG Anunoby was the last remaining piece, and to get in return RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley, two young upcoming players. I think Emmanuel Quickley can have a Tyrese Maxey type of leap. I'm not saying he's going to be that kind of guy, but I think he has the capability to do it. We'll see if he can. But he's been that good, shooting 41% or 42% from three on seven attempts a game since joining this team. I just think he's been a really positive addition, and I think he's a really positive mindset as a player. And I think RJ Barrett can be a really good, two-way stopper and, decent three-point shooter to go alongside him and Scottie Barnes, who's supposed to be the real star for this team. So I think they have something really great that they're cooking up over there. And ultimately, I think if you are able to retool that roster, add a couple more pieces, maybe get some more draft picks that can assist in the long term, you can end up with an OKC type of situation where you have a really good young core and you're in a really good position a couple years down the line. So I really do think this is an A-plus situation to turn a I think a team, one of the most directionless teams in the NBA last year or 2 years ago, into a team that has a very significant direction. That's all you can ask for. Like, I'm sure Bulls fans wish they could be Raptors fans right now. Sorry, Bulls fans, I'm taking a shot at your organization, but you're the prototype and no direction organization. Even the Wizards are trying. But
True.
moving on to the Knicks side of this thing, I think, like you've said, this has just been too injured of a team to really make a real judgment. I do think OG Anunoby, when he's on the court, it's looked amazing. And if he had been healthy, I think I could have given them like an A as well. But just since he hasn't been there, I'm gonna give it a B, as well as the Bogdanovich thing, because you still have the upside in having him. That's just an extra weapon to add to your roster. You didn't have to give up anything for him, but he hasn't quite been what you expected. Ultimately, I'm not worried about this Knicks team. They're going to get healthy by the time the postseason comes around, and I think this time they're built better to handle the responsibilities of a brutalizing postseason against really good teams.
Yeah, I just think they have more weapons, and I think that's all you could really ask for. And didn't have to give up too much to get it. Like, you can
Exactly.
still hold on to a lot of your key pieces, still have Brunson, still have Randle. And so I think the Knicks are better off because of it, but as you said, it's been a bit disappointing, at least in the short term.
Yeah, in the short
And
term, it seems like no teams have had like negative grades. Like, I feel like no team has had an abysmal offseason as at least one usually does. So that's a little surprising.
yeah, no, definitely. But with that, I think that's a good place to call
Yeah.
it. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll be back next week to cover all things NBA. So make sure you stay tuned. Take
Peace.
care.